welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Welcome, everybody, to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I'm your host, James Edwards, and we appreciate you joining us for another installment of our award-winning broadcast. The date is Saturday, July 17th, 2010, as we sit here with you from AM 1380, WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee, going out to the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network. We're simulcasting online at thepoliticalcesspool.org, where our broadcast archives become available immediately at the conclusion of our show. And a big show it is tonight. Coming up during tonight's third hour, the third hour of tonight's program, we will be joined by two great guests, Dr. Kevin MacDonald and Bill Johnson, the chairman of the American Third Position. They're going to be talking about a two-time Olympic gold medalist that has joined this brand new America First political party. That is forthcoming in the third hour, Kevin MacDonald and Bill Johnson. During tonight's second hour, Bill Rowland will be joining me as co-host as we really look into the NAACP versus Tea Party flap. How did the Tea Party respond? Well, just about as badly as you could have expected, and Bill Rowland will be examining that in great detail. But first, Keith Alexander joins me, and I'm shaking the hand of Keith Alexander right now. Keith, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great. It's always good to be in the cesspool. You know, the left doesn't ever disappoint. We are always served up with a new plate full of dreck, as they say, in the Upper West Side of Manhattan to deal with here on the political cesspool. And, of course, their efforts to stifle free speech in America are never-ending, and which that takes us really to our first topic of the night, which is the Mel Gibson flap.
Well, Keith, and everyone listening, if you've been to our blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org this week, you'll notice that I posted a pretty extensive article on the Mel Gibson controversy, if you want to call it that. Of course, Mel Gibson's dad, Hutton, is a very good friend of ours and has appeared on this show, and I actually spoke with him this week. But I felt obligated to put forth a very lengthy article about Mel Gibson. It has been picked up by numerous sources. It's really gone viral on the Internet and has gotten an overwhelmingly positive response. And as Keith said, we'll start off right there. Keith, what was the gist of that article and why was it important?
It was an article that was printed in the Occidental Observer, which I think is probably the number one intellectual sounding board for true conservatism in America. And James, of course, when he hits the nail on the head, he drives it straight. And what he did in this article was say that this is all about the fact that Hollywood's Jewish leadership has decided that Mel Gibson has to go down because he actually produced and overcame their efforts at censorship by producing and distributing the movie Passion of the Christ. And you have shown, for example, that people that are guilty of much greater sins than Mel Gibson at worst, I think, could be accused of being boorish, but he wasn't physically violent. He didn't break any laws in his tirade with his live-in lover and the mother of a child of his. On the other hand, Roman Polanski drugged, raped, and sodomized an underage girl, a 13-year-old aspiring starlet. And how does Hollywood respond to that? Well, Hollywood responds to that by saying that this man is innocent. This is nothing but the yokels in red state America trying to force their bogus morality on the rest of the world. And we've got this continental playboy, Roman Polanski, and we need to just learn to live with his predilections and lifestyles. And, of course, there's a reason for that discrepancy in treatment, and then guess what it is? What is it, James?
Keith, I'm going to let you have the fun. I'm going to let you break it to them. I'm sure they haven't figured it out yet.
Let's have a multiple-choice question here. Is Roman Polanski one Irish, two Italian, three a southern white Gentile, or is he a Jew? Now, if you guessed anything other than number four, then you haven't been listening to this show enough. That's why, look, You know, it's as clear, it's as plain as the nose on your face. Hollywood has 8 major movie studios. All 8 have Jewish CEOs. Jewish power and influence in Hollywood has been a given ever since the late 1930s. But the Jewish power in Hollywood has become bolder and bolder with the passage of time, to the point that they're now serving up nothing but, you know, Jewish friendly or Jewish advocacy type movies like Inglourious Basterds, TV shows that focus on Jewish life in Manhattan like Seinfeld, and a person like Mel Gibson, who tries to stand up for traditional Christianity, he's dead meat. Hollywood has no place for him. They want him crucified and basically shut up once and for all.
It's interesting that you mentioned the word crucified, Keith, because the title of my article was, in fact, The Crucifixion of Mel Gibson. And I just want to let people know that I received hundreds of emails this week in response to this one single article, and there were 3 of them that were negative. All of the others were positive. If you haven't read this article yet, you got to do it. It's at thepoliticalcesspool.org on the blog, The Crucifixion of Mel Gibson. And as Keith has pointed out, I point out the blatant hypocrisies and contradictions of the official story there. Ari Emanuel, who is Rahm Emanuel's brother, was the one who made the decision to drop Mel Gibson. His agency dropped Mel Gibson as one of their clients, and they said it's because Mel Gibson used the N-word, God forbid, in one of his alleged phone calls that were secretly taped by his girlfriend. Well, I demonstrate beyond a shadow of a doubt that that is not why Ari Emanuel and this talent agency dropped Mel Gibson. I pointed out, Keith mentioned the Roman Polanski incident and how that compares and contrasts with this, but I pointed out that the William Morris Endeavor Agency, which is headed up by Ari Emanuel, represents numerous clients who use the N-word on a daily basis, rappers, singers, even Charlie Sheen, who they just recently negotiated a $2 million contract, $2 million per episode for 2.5 men. He called his own girlfriend the dreaded N-word, and yet they still not only represent him, but represent him quite well. So you've got to read it, The Crucifixion of Mel Gibson. There's much more to it than that, of course, but it is really, if I do say so myself, one of the best pieces that we've ever published to thepoliticalcesspool.org.
What it is, James, it shows that, as George Orwell said, all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. Charlie Sheen can get by with it because he didn't create a movie like The Passion of the Christ, which apparently Jewish chauvinists like the ones that run Hollywood found extremely offensive. On the other hand, you know that it's, you know, the N-word obviously is just a convenient crutch for Ari Emanuel. And again, very few people knew that he's the guy who's actually pulling the strings at the William Morris Agency, which is probably the oldest and most well-known talent agency associated with the film industry, really since the 1930s. Well, you know, the N-word is a convenient crutch, but like James said, you know, some people can use the N-word and there's absolutely no, it's a ho-hum matter altogether. The N-word is not the reason that Mel Gibson is undergoing what he's undergoing now. They're interested in getting rid of him because he is a Gentile, traditional Catholic, who, like his father, knows all about Jewish power and influence and isn't afraid to speak up about it.
Well, Keith, you're exactly right, and much worse than that, Mel Gibson made a film that glorifies Jesus Christ, and he did so in a way that generated huge returns for him at the box office, and deservingly so. But it's a great article, again, ladies and gentlemen, The Crucifixion of Mel Gibson. Go check it out, and I'm sure you'll be hearing more about it. You mentioned the Inglourious Basterds. We were, of course, denounced by an Inglourious Bastard last week, Eli Roth, who played the character Bear Jew in Quentin Tarantino's Oscar-winning film. We mentioned that last week, so we won't revisit that, but he denounced us, of course, for our association with the Gibson family and articles like this.
Well, I was watching the Joy Behar show, and, of course, she's a good daughter of Israel, when I was channel surfing on the cable at my house the other day, and she had the inglorious bastardette, Gloria Allred, on there, who is her resident feminist, and it was brought out to her by one of her guests that Mel Gibson's current girlfriend, the one who started all this flap and recorded him, is a gold digger. And she said, so what? So what? That doesn't count at all. You know, baloney.
Well, they have no rules, Keith. They operate by whatever rules benefit them. They have no honor. They have no morals. That's right. We've got to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. But I promise you, we're just getting started on tonight's installment of The Political Cesspool. We'll be right back.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. James Edwards and Keith Alexander serving as your hosts this first hour. Again, coming up later in the show, Bill Rowland will be with me during the second hour to discuss the NAACP versus the Tea Parties. And then in the third hour, we're going to have a party with Winston Smith co-hosting with me. Our featured guest will be Dr. Kevin McDonald and Bill Johnson of the American Third Position. Very exciting news happening there that will leave you on an upbeat and positive note as we round out the program. So all that and more forthcoming, still much more this hour. I want to give you a quick program announcement that you'll have the opportunity to meet me live in the flesh, as Keith Alexander is doing right now. Keith can tell you what a privilege that is, I'm sure. In Jackson, Mississippi, I've accepted a speaking engagement and encourage any fans of the show who are within driving distance to make plans to join me. The festivities are going to be taking place at a luxury hotel in the Jackson, Mississippi area on Thursday, July 22nd, beginning at 6 p.m. I'm going to be the keynote speaker and will be on hand to sign autographed copies of my brand new book, Racism Smashism, which you can get tonight. Order it tonight, by the way, at thepoliticalcesspool.org. But this engagement is open to the public. Dinner is going to be included for all attendees free of charge. Now, semi-formal attire is required. And if you want to come, you got to RSVP by emailing media@thepoliticalcesspool.org. So again, to RSVP to this free dinner banquet that's being put on by a generous contributor to the radio program in Jackson, Mississippi, this Thursday, July 22nd. You got to email media@thepoliticalcesspool.org. We're expecting a big crowd, and we want you to be a part of it. So again, that's this coming Thursday, media@thepoliticalcesspool.org to reply. Now, or to RSVP, I should say. Keith, topic for this segment is the infamous jumped up white trash Tui family, who unfortunately hail right here from Memphis, Tennessee. Remind everybody, if they need reminding, who the Tuis are and why they are on the radar of the Political Cesspool radio program this week.
Well, you know, we have our favorites here at the Political Cesspool, and some of them just keep showing up like a bad penny. This week, I was listening to the radio in my car, and lo and behold, who should come on Glenn Beck's program? Glenn Beck, the phony conservative du jour of the conservative movement in America, the guy that worships at the shrine of Martin Luther King and every other civil rights character, and basically undermines true conservatism at every juncture. He was interviewing that dynamic duo, Sean and Leanne Tui, the principals of the Blindside movie, the people that was about, that adopted a black teenager who just happened to be 6'5", 350 pounds, and had a future in football. They bring him in off the streets. They're Memphis, Tennessee's answer to Mother Teresa, according to Hollywood now, because Hollywood has a new agenda for race relations in America. They basically want to model for red state Gentiles, particularly fundamentalist Christians, like the Tuis profess to be, that there is a new division of labor now in the raising of children in America. Blacks get to have the fun of making them, while white, middle class, and above people will have the burden and responsibility of raising them in their homes so that they can be equipped to take over leadership of America, while the actual progeny of white Gentiles go begging.
And, of course, another one of their favorite activities, Keith, when they're not subverting natural law, is to attack honorable symbols like the Confederate flag. The Toohey's both went to the University of Ole Miss, and they have been very active in the deconstruction of that university, which was, of course, founded and created by Confederate generals, by the way. But they have been very active in the removal of Colonel Reb and the Confederate flag from Ole Miss. That's just for fun, though. But what are they up to this week?
Well, there is no liberal bandwagon that rolls through Oxford, Mississippi that they don't enthusiastically jump on, including Leanne Toohey putting down her own biological father as a virulent racist. And the reason she found that she could do this, of course, conveniently after he had passed on to his reward, was that when the busing order came down in Memphis, where she was growing up with her father, who was a U.S. Marshal, her father, horror of horrors, took her out of the public school system, like just about every other conscientious parent did in Memphis at the time, and enrolled her in what school? Briarcrest Baptist School. And Briarcrest Baptist School is now Briarcrest Christian Academy, which is the very same school where she sent her child, her natural children, and Michael Orr. But she was on the Glenn Beck Show along with Sean, you know, kind of this Mutt and Jeff routine. It's kind of Fibber McGee and Molly or something, where, you know, Sean is the all shucks boob and Leanne is the steel magnolia, touting their new book called The Lord Loveth a Cheerful Giver. And, of course, the cheerful givers are none other than that saintly duo, the Toohey's. And, of course, you have bumbling fool all shucks, not only Sean Toohey, but Glenn Beck, who's giggling. He's so pleased with himself all the time, he can barely figure out what the show is about when you're listening to it. And Leanne was playing the steel magnolia, putting him down when she wasn't putting down her husband. Again, modeling proper behavior in the new liberal multicultural America, where the women wear the pants in the family and the men are the walking checkbooks that need to shut up after writing the check. And what they were doing, in addition, they were talking about how the Michael Orr episode is just an example of what cheerful givers do. And they said that they're so happy that they are getting all sorts of feedback through the mail and through the internet and otherwise, that they're role models now. They're considered role models. They consider themselves primarily role models. And, of course, anyone that disagrees with this assessment is a hater, a bigot, and of course, the coup de grace is applied, as James would predict, by calling them a racist. Anyone who opposes their agenda is a racist. And, of course, in the Amen Corner, firmly ensconced, is Glenn Beck, who agrees with every bit of this. And despite the fact that he's being put down left, right, and sideways by Leanne Toohey, is kissing her posterior throughout the whole interview. I tell you, it was a sickening spectacle, Jane.
He's sick. Glenn Beck is a pervert and a very disturbing one at that, that he could even remotely qualify as a voice for conservatism really is a great indicator of what a sad shape conservatism is in these days. That's why the Political Cesspool is proud to stand as the voice of true, authentic, America first, paleoconservatism. This is the role we play. And that's why Glenn Beck is so dangerous. People like Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, they give you just enough, they sprinkle in just enough truth to make it appear as though that they're on your side. But nothing could be further than the truth. And in actuality, they are far more dangerous than the enemies that we know. And so it certainly doesn't surprise me, Keith, that he would have on lowlifes like the Toohey's, but nevertheless, it's our duty to bring these things to your attention, and it's our duty to bring to your attention that which the mainstream media, the so-called mainstream media, is always going to skew. They tout the TUIs as this is a veritable. They are exactly what the modern day Southerner should be, and nothing could be further than the actual truth. Well, Keith, we got about 5 seconds to break.
Okay, and what they do, what these role models do, is they denounce their ancestors as being moral inferiors, and they keep real conservatism confused and helpless.
Got to take a break. We'll be right back.
Well, guys, we'll be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. So far, we've covered the crucifixion of Mel Gibson and the latest manifestation of cultural Marxism from the Tui family. Going to allow Keith to give you a final thought on that. But first, I want to remind you that as great as tonight's show is going to be, last week's show was equally good. Of course, they're all good. If you missed last week's program, we had a very special guest that I feel obligated to remind you about. He was Sheriff Paul Bobeau of Pinal County, Arizona. He is one elected official that is actually doing his job. Imagine that. He's challenged Obama regarding immigration and has had his life threatened by Mexican drug cartels for his role in attempting to secure our border. He appears frequently on Fox News and CNN, and last week, last Saturday night, was our guest here on the Political Cesspool. If you missed our interview with him, and kudos to Eddie the Bombardier Miller, my co-host, for putting that interview together. If you missed it, you got to go back in the broadcast archives and listen to that show. Listen to all of the show. He appeared during the third hour specifically. Sheriff Paul Bobeau is an American patriot who deserves your support, and for a number of reasons, which can all be found when you go back to thepoliticalcesspool.org, consult our vast library of broadcast archives. Select the program dated last week and listen to that show. I very rarely plug a previous program, but this was one that the guest so sterling. It certainly deserves that. But Keith, a final comment from you about the subject we were discussing last segment, and that being the Sean and Leanne Tui.
Well, it was Sean and Leanne Tui's interview on the Glenn Beck program, and here at the Cesspool, we give credit where credit is due. If you really want to get the skinny on Glenn Beck and why he is so dangerous, he and people like the Tuis are intent upon hijacking conservatism and transforming it into some tepid form of liberalism. Check Alternative Right. That's Richard Spencer's excellent internet blog, and a recent article by, again, to prove that we're not anti-Semitic, Paul Gottfried, one of our favorite sources here at the Cesspool, for an article that he wrote on Glenn Beck and why Glenn Beck is so dangerous and why no authentic traditional conservative should ever mistake him for a conservative. He is a liberal, and he's a perfect example of what our mutual friend Bill Fox calls the decon analogy. Decon is 99.9% wholesome, only 1% poisonous, but that 1% poisonous is enough to make it one of the deadliest rat poisons on the market. So consequently, don't buy the decon that the Tuis and Glenn Beck are trying to peddle to you, and be sure to tell your friends that this is bogus, this is phony. Don't listen to them, listen to us here at the Political Cesspool.
Of course, as deadly as decon is, Glenn Beck would be 100 times more deadly, because he probably is about 70-30, 70% bogus and 30% saying things we can agree with. But all this nonsense of him praising Martin Luther King as some sort of a virtuous American worthy of adulation is so far off kilter that it goes without saying. And then, of course, his commentaries where he says America was founded by blacks, and and not people of European stock. And he said that. He's a sick, deranged lunatic.
Well, not only that, but just think about this.
Or maybe he's not. Maybe he's just doing his job.
I think that's what he's hired to do. Martin Luther King makes Mel Gibson look like St. Peter. I've never seen anybody that has been held up to the American public for adulation like Martin Luther King has that is, as much of a moral reprobate as he is. He is, let me just tell you, a moral paragon, which Martin Luther King is supposed to be, doesn't need to have his FBI file sealed for 50 years by a federal judge. That ought to tell you everything you need to know, and it ought to also tell Glenn Beck what he needs to know, but Glenn Beck is part of the paid opposition.
And the damage that Martin Luther King and his movement, which wasn't about civil rights at all, I have no problem with equal justice under law, equal opportunity for all, and special preferential treatment for none. But that's certainly what Martin Luther King had in mind, and the fallout from that is still very apparent. Case in point, Keith, in 2008, we had a global economic meltdown with the American economy. It was in tatters and shambles. Of course, it still is. They were able to put a Band-Aid on to kind of mask the coming collapse for a little bit longer, but why, what was a big reason, let me ask, did that occur back in 2008, and have we learned our lesson?
Obviously we haven't. We looked at the local newspaper here in Memphis back last week, and there was an article about diversity in banking and touting it with the First Tennessee Bank in Memphis, which is part of First Horizon. Well, First Horizon took a tremendous beating in the stock market as part of the financial meltdown caused by the minority mortgage preferences. Again, not at all consistent with this public persona given to the civil rights movement that we just want to do away with favoritism for whites and we want equal justice for all. No, it was all about, and what Martin Luther King was all about, and what Glenn Beck doesn't understand or else is intentionally ignoring about Martin Luther King, was that he was all about changing things around and discriminating in favor of black people, just like Thurgood Marshall. He was the NAACP's lawyer who argued the Brown versus Board of Education case and later became a U.S. Supreme Court. He's told William Douglas, who was another good card-carrying liberal who started to object about affirmative action and about busing, he told him right to his face, "You guys have discriminated for a long time. Now it's our, in other words, black people's turn." That's what happened in the financial meltdown. They were favoring black people and to a lesser degree Hispanics in granting mortgage loans for the purchase of houses, giving them to people that would not otherwise qualify. And there's a reason they didn't qualify, because they're a bunch of deadbeats. And when they acted true to form and started defaulting on their mortgage loans, it caused almost the entire financial structure of the world to go down the drain, James.
Well, Keith, and again, tying this back in to King and the alleged supposed civil rights movement, which was anything but, these banks really didn't have a choice. If they didn't give them a loan, they're going to be sued or taken to task for discrimination. If they do give them the loan and the deadbeats falter, they're predatory lenders. I mean, so the banks almost...
Well, they still can't win even then, because when these people default, then they're considered predatory lenders.
Exactly.
At first, they were called to task for so-called redlining of black neighborhoods and not making loans to black people to purchase their houses. Then when they started favoring them, according to the Community Reinvestment Act, a federal law passed during the Carter administration and really ramped up during the Clinton years, when they did that and these people predictably started defaulting on their loans, and people like the Chinese who had bought these Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac securitized mortgage bundles started losing their shirts, then they start blaming Wells Fargo, Countrywide, and all these other financial institutions that were supporting all of this.
And I'm not saying, of course, in no way am I saying that the people who head up these banks are on our side. I mean, it's obviously that they're not, but the individual mortgage lender, and some of them have to be good people, they are the ones who are faced with the situation Are they discriminating or are they predatory lenders? Either way,
well,
it's not going to work out good.
Yeah, you find out that, you know, you'd better be a good boy and become a liberal if you want to have a future in American business, and particularly in mortgage banking. They learned this lesson well. And as a result, they went down the tubes, and now they're being sued by groups like the NAACP and other and Acorn, saying that they are now guilty of not redlining, but greenlining.
But of
give
course,
me a break.
The article in the paper this week says we need more diversity in banking, so much so, in fact, that we've got to have this one particular bank is, you know, making its own department, diversity bank.
And it's right across from the Minority Business Council here in Memphis, and they're just touting it. First Horizon stock finally unloaded its toxic mortgage assets at a great loss to its shareholders, and was beginning to rebound, and now I see that the people in charge haven't learned a blessed thing from their experience in the minority mortgage meltdown. If you have any First Horizon stock, I would suggest that you drop it pretty quickly because they apparently don't learn. What do they say? Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again but expecting different results. The management at First Tennessee apparently believes that doing the same thing is going to result in different results than it did before. And, of course, what is that? That's insanity.
Well, Keith, that being said, we're going to take another break here on the Political Cesspool radio program. We'll be back right after this with more. Don't go anywhere.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show. Quick review of the announcements that we've thrown at you thus far tonight. Don't forget that I will be appearing in Jackson, Mississippi. About 3 hours south of where we sit here tonight in Memphis, Tennessee. I'll be in Jackson on Thursday, this coming Thursday, July 22nd, for a book signing. It's actually going to be a dinner banquet. I'll be giving a talk and then signing copies of my new book, Racism, Schmacism. That all takes place this Thursday. You can be there. It's free of charge, being put on by a generous contributor to the radio program. It all happens this Thursday. To reserve your seat and to get more information, RSVP by emailing media@thepoliticalcesspool.org. media@thepoliticalcesspool.org. Coming up later in the show tonight, we'll be hearing from a couple of leaders of the American Third Position. They are Dr. Kevin McDonald and Bill Johnson. Those two gentlemen will be appearing in tandem to discuss recent news stories that have appeared concerning the party, the addition of a two-time Olympic gold medal winner who has joined the American Third Position effort, and more. So that's coming up again tonight during the third hour. But before that, Bill Rowland will be joining me during the second hour as we examine in detail the war of words between the NAACP and the Tea Party. And Keith, you and I now are going to set the table for Bill by giving a little cursory review of this before Bill joins us to provide a little more in-depth analysis. I don't know who I'm more disappointed in. I guess you would expect this type of behavior from the NAACP. They obviously have no reason to exist anymore. No longer can they say that they're fighting for the advancement of colored people or equality. Minorities have preferential treatment over whites in any number of things. And so, with no reason to really exist, I guess their sole purpose is just to go around and call everybody racist. That seems to work quite well in stifling debate. That's why I wrote my book, Racism, Schmacism. It's why everybody listening to this show should read my book. But nevertheless, I don't know if I'm more upset with them, Keith, or the Tea Party for the way they've responded. Why don't you give us a little, just a little sampling of what's to come during tonight's second hour by sharing with us your thoughts on this issue. Well, first of all, I guess just let people know what's going on in case they haven't read the news.
The NAACP, James, has decided that and they want to get back in the news. They are a dying organization. Like you said, their time is come and gone. They had a pernicious effect when they were at their height. Now they're basically, and they were at their height basically when they were run by a Jewish cadre of leaders. When they decided to drive the whites out, which included the Jews, they have basically become a paper tiger. If you can go back in history to the early 70s when they started having black leadership for the first time, that is remarkably the moment in history when they stopped being relevant to the debate on race relations. But the only time you hear about the NAACP nowadays, for the most part, is either a sex scandal or some type of embezzlement scandal by its black leadership. But they have decided they want to fall in line with the forces of Obama and accuse the Tea Party movement of being racist. And, of course, we would expect this from a bunch of brain-dead, old civil rights era hacks. On the other hand, the Tea Party's reaction shows just exactly how completely and fully white people in America and in the world have been brainwashed and psychologically conditioned. Rather than saying, this is baloney, we are an ideological movement, the presence of black people or the absence of black people in this movement has nothing to do with the principles that we support, and if black people support those principles, they're more than welcome to join us. Instead, they fall all over themselves trying to deny that they are racist and trying to promote black people within their ranks to positions of authority that they don't deserve. The local Memphis, Tennessee chapter of the Tea Party, headed by a fellow named Mark Skoda from Chicago, is a perfect example of this. He's fallen all over himself recruiting and thrusting to the top of his local organization black people that have no other credentials other than they're black. As somebody told me, what happens at a Tea Party movement is that you see more black people up on the speaker's platform than you do in the audience. And if these people think they're actually going to get black people to support a conservative movement, they're crazy.
I mean, blacks just aren't interested. For the most part, there are always exceptions, but the rule is, the political rule is, black people just aren't interested in a conservative limited government that's going to take away their welfare benefits. I mean, that's just plain and simple, cut and dry. That is it.
What they want is a government. That's what they think government is supposed to do. It's supposed to provide benefits for people that can't be bothered to work for them.
And I wish it wasn't that way, Keith. If it wasn't that way, we certainly wouldn't have a problem. But for the Tea Party to insist that it's a diverse movement, when anybody with eyes that work can see that 99% of the crowd at any given Tea Party rally are white, it's a fool's errand for them to attempt to curry favor with these people who have never, will never support that cause.
Well, let's put the facts on the table. The fact is that blacks are the most liberal demographic category in the general population.
Well, besides Jews, of course.
No, even more so than Jews.
Jewish people are certainly reactionarily liberal.
Well, they're reflexively liberal, but here's what Jews, typically 80% of Jews vote for the Democratic candidate for president.
I see where you're going now. No, you actually make a good point.
On the other hand, blacks are 90% plus voters for the Democratic candidate, they even outdo the Jewish population in terms of being liberal.
By that standard of measurement, you're absolutely right.
And as a result, anybody that thinks they're going to convert black people to conservatism or to have them support a truly conservative movement is smoking wacky weed. I don't know what is, something is wrong with somebody. Anybody that believes that should be under lock and key. All they're showing is that they're either misinformed or that they are intentionally lying to the American people. And I would hate to think that the Tea Party movement is intentionally lying to the American people. I think they've just drunk too much liberal Kool-Aid, and it's mixed in as part of their DNA, and they really can't distinguish. They're not a reliable source of information.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to help the Tea Party out, and I say this not as a shameless plug, perhaps I should have Keith say it on my behalf, but I think Keith will echo what I say here. If you want to help the Tea Party out,
buy James's book.
There you go. Thank you, Keith. I really do think
that. Pass it out to Tea Party people and say, look, wake up and smell the coffee. You're not going to convert blacks to being a cadre for conservatism. All you're going to do is tell your base that you have no concern for them. You know, Pat Buchanan said, go hunting where the ducks are, and the Republican Party and the Tea Party movement need to pay attention to that, because what you're doing by allowing these unqualified people to leapfrog real conservative whites who've served time in the trenches, both in the Tea Party movement and in the Republican Party, to be overmatched and by blacks. For example, the Republican Party, what this Mark Skoda guy did recently was take three candidates, one in Mississippi, Angela McGowan, one in Alabama, Les Phillips, and one in Tennessee, Charlotte Bergman, up to Michael Steele, the black head of the Republican Party, and got a commitment for extraordinary funding for their campaigns. Of course, none of their white Republican challengers in the primary election got one centavo from the Republican Party. Now, you know, I thought this was all about equality, people. I thought it was about doing away with discrimination and preferential treatment for one race over another, and we can see, obviously, that what we've done is we've swapped one set of preferences for another, and if you don't see that as being a violation of conservative principles and principles of basic fairness, then, you know, it's time for you to sit on some psychiatrist's couch and get your mind right, as they
say. Well, it's just idiocy, for the reasons you've mentioned so clearly, Keith. 99% of the black population voted for Obama. Do you really think you're going to get a substantial number of them to come in and join the Tea Party? No, but, you know, and the people who joined the Tea Party are people who are dissatisfied with the Republican Party. You can't even get many Republicans to come into the Tea Party. How are you going to get Democrats? Well, again, if you want to know how to build a movement that can win, I do think people should buy and distribute my book to these boneheads that have somehow ascended into leadership positions with the Tea Party. And you mentioned go hunting where the ducks are. Pat Buchanan did say that, and he said it on this very show.
That's all the final that word, Keith. That's all that you can do. You've got to let people see. We say give light, and the people will find their own way. You've got to call groups like Glenn Beck, the Tuies, the Tea Party movement, and the Republican Party out on their blatant discrimination and say, you need to be true to your principles, and you can't be true to your principles if you are involved in racial favoritism.
If you want to know where the light is, you want to come to the light, as they say in Poltergeist, come to the political cesspool and bask in the glow of our luminescence. We will always keep the light on for you.
What we say is that, as the Bible says, the truth will set you free. And we deal with the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
And we'll continue with the truth in the second hour right after these words.
Right after these messages.
And Harv leaped to his feet and said, something's got a hold on me. Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the A.